So, I just want to share with you a story which gave me a lot of chizik. I did hear very interesting things from Ashver yesterday, but that's not. I heard it somewhere else. The after the war, there was a DP camps. The DP camps, displaced persons camps, where Nebuch the people who after the war they had nowhere to go. They literally nowhere to go. A lot of people, a lot of the communities were wiped out and destroyed. They had literally nowhere to go. My grandmother also was in a DP camp. So they ended up in a DP camp. And it was one of the famous DP camps was Feldafing. And over there, the following incident happened. There was the Blushim Rebbe, Zichron Livrach, was a great tzaddik. And his step-grandson told me the following story. There was after the war in Feldafing, it was in 1946, in Hanukkah, they were just literally months after liberation, and there was hundreds of, maybe even thousands of Yidden were in the DP camp. I had nowhere to go. They just lost all their families, all their Kehillahs, they had literally nowhere to go, and they had mamash no possessions, nothing, and they did Hanukkah there. And there was only one menorah there, and there was only one person who would be, and they all agreed that the person who should light in Feldafing in the DP camp, who should light the menorah, who would be the Blushim Rebbe, who was a very great tzaddik already at that point, he was famous and well known. They prepared the menorah with a little bit of, they had a few boxes were sent from America with a few items, and they had just sufficient to light the menorah. He was about to light the menorah. There were hundreds of people who attended in this place in the DP camp. He was lighting the menorah the first night, and he was about to make the first bracha, and the second bracha, and the first night, the third bracha of Shechionu. But as he's about to say the bracha, he's looking around, he's looking to the right, he's looking to the left, and you can see that he's a bit flustered, and he's not moving on. He says, bracha to Hashem, he's not moving on. He can't, first bracha, lehadlik ne, he did okay, when he came to Osonissim, and he just freezes, and he looks around to the right and to the left, and he's not continuing. But then eventually, after a few seconds that seemed like an eternity, he continues, he makes the bracha. And he lights, after making the bracha, he lights the menorah. After the event, the Sangmo is two, hundreds of people attending there who just survived the Nebuch the war. And one person I've forgotten his name, I think his name was Mashovsky or something very similar to that, was the head of the Bund, of the Warsaw Bund. You know, the Warsaw Bund was the maskilim of the extremist maskilim. They were the absolute left-wingers, they had nothing in mind but to destroy Yiddishkeit. And they were Yidden, they had the culture but they hated the Torah and Yiddishkeit. And the Warsaw Bund was famous. And the head of the Warsaw Bund was, I think, Mashovsky, something like that. He then approached the Blushim Rebbe, says, listen, it doesn't make any sense. You're just making a, I also attended, but I must tell you, it doesn't make any sense. We just survived the war. Our families didn't. We just about made it. We have nothing but our prisoners' clothes. And we have, how are you making over here? Bracha she'asa nitzim la v'seinu. How are you making Shechionu? It doesn't make any sense. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous. We're trying to make chozik off. That's what this person said to the Blushim Rebbe. And Blushim Rebbe said, you are 100% right. Do you know what? I had exactly the same kasha. How can I say she'asa nitzim la v'seinu while my 12 kids were killed, and my wife was killed, and my father was killed, and my shver was killed? How can I make she'asa nitzim la v'seinu over here in Feldafing in 1946? It doesn't make any sense. But then I must tell you, I couldn't make the bracha. If you noticed, Blushim Rebbe says, I was looking to the right and to the left because I said, I was physically unable to make the bracha. Because I wanted to pass it on to somebody who's able to be moed to the olam. I was unable to. And if you noticed, I was looking around. But then as I was looking around to find somebody to take over my bracha, I looked and I saw a crowd behind me of hundreds and hundreds of Yidden. In fact, thousands of Yidden were here. And I said, you know what, actually, I changed my mind at that point. So there's hundreds of Yidden that are, nevertheless, despite all the challenges, and despite it all, they're still here to listen to a she'asa nitzim, and they're still here, despite all odds, they're still here to be here on Hanukkah, and despite all odds, they're still here to make a Hanukkah. That's indeed the nest. There's no greater nest than that. And it made a lot of sense to actually say she'asa nitzim la v'seinu and shechionu v'kiyamonu, because despite all odds to still be here, look at Klal Yisrael chai v'kayim, Klal Yisrael is still here to keep the Torah and to keep mitzvahs and to thank and praise the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hence I decided, you know what, actually, yes, it does make sense, and I continued making the bracha at that point and I fulfilled the mitzvah despite all odds. That's what the Blushim Rebbe said. The head of the Rav Shabbat had nothing to respond. He was absolutely flabbergasted. He was absolutely blown away. And many, many years later, he said he stopped was a changed person from that conversation with the Bushva Rebbe. And many years later, in the 70s and 80s, he kept on speaking about this story, this conversation he had with the Bushva Rebbe. And that story is reported from some. So the Bushva Rebbe never shared that conversation with anyone. But that head of the Bund, he was a transformed person from that. It's that you can actually just reframe things and look at it from a different perspective and see to Kachov Klalisol how they keep on flourishing despite all odds. And he shared the story with people who are reporting this story. I think it's a moedig because that's mamash the essence of Chanukah. Okay, Rabbi, so we're up to Simon Reishain Aleph, and we're up to see if you'd base, and we're in Hilchas Kiddush, and we're learning the following now. Any yakas here that washed before? Any yakas that washed before? That washed before Kiddush? It's endangered species.
Did your brother Sukkot's time?
Sukkot's time, you do. Oh, Sukkot's time.
Your father?
Kiddush before Kiddush, you wash and you make Kiddush, or Kiddush and then wash. Kiddush wash or wash Kiddush. Kiddush wash. Okay. Pardon?
Wash before Kiddush.
Okay, let us see. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Acha shekiddush al hakoyis, after you made Kiddush, noitel yodov, you wash your hands, humevoich al netilas yadayim, and you make the boch al netilas yadayim. So you make Kiddush al hakoyis, you wash your hands, and you say the bracha of Netilas Yadayim. Ve'im lo tal yodav koidim kiddush, and if you washed your hands prior to kiddush Friday night, if you washed your hands before, for a moment, goli daita, you showed, you revealed your das, terifta, that bread chaviv alei, you showed that bread is particularly choshev to you, is important to you, is nice to you. And the bread, if you wash before kiddush, that shows that bread is really the main thing, because you obviously wash for bread. So then, lo yikadosh al yayin elo lapas. So if you washed before kiddush, you washed and you make kiddush, it doesn't make sense to make bir pri'agofen, because you just showed the bir pri'agofen, you just showed the wine, that you don't really care about the wine, and the bread is much more choshev to you. So if you did wash before kiddush, says the Shulpin Shulchan Aruch, you have to make kiddush al hapas. You have to make motzi lechem noritz and not pri agofen. That's what the Shulchan Aruch's first opinion says. Says the Mishneh Berurah in Seif Katan. Says the Mishneh Berurah in Seif Katan Nunches. Nunches explains to us the first opinion, which is the opinion that we all follow. Why is it that we wash after kiddush? Why? What's the reason behind it? Why don't we wash before kiddush? Oh no, that's not really the reason, because we see no. So the Mishneh Berurah says, "V'lo koydem kedoy shelo yafsik ba kiddush benetilas yadayim la'motzi." So we are makbid to make kiddush after that. There shouldn't be a hefsek. We don't want to make the interruption of the kiddush between netilas yadayim and la'motzi. But he says, in principle, if they are not making kiddush themselves, if there's other people around the table, they want to wash beforehand, they can do that. It's not a problem. People, for logistic reason, they want to wash before. It's fine, they can do that. Yeah, Mishneh Berurah have gotten samach, the chaviv alei bread is important to them. That's why he washed so early. He washed early because bread is important for him. Shuroev, he is hungry, umemai is rushing and hurrying, lechol pas to eat bread. Sivkotn samach alef, yesh oimre. No, that's the Ramo already. Okay, so Ramo continues. Yesh oimre, some say, no. Lechatcheli yesh litol yodov koidim ha-kiddush. He says, some say, lechatcheli you should wash your hands before kiddush, velekaddush al yayin, and you can still make kiddush al yayin. So, the Ramo says that this rift chaviv alei, that's not true. And you're not necessarily showing anybody that bread is more choshev to you just by making kiddush after washing. You can wash and make kiddush and still make pri'agofen often. You've not shown anybody anything about your relationship to bread and chalas. It's fine. You can wash, make kiddush, and then pri'agofen. That's fine. And then after it's hamoitzi. He says, that's fine. He said, in fact, says Ramo, Yishon delechatchile yishlitol yodov koidim ha-kiddush lekaddush al yayin. So that actually, it's lechatchile to do that. It's lechatchile to wash before kiddush and make pri'agofen. And after Tzamoitzi, and the Mishnebura explains, if Kotten Tzamach Aleph, it's not considered interruption. Kiddush is necessary for eating. So it's tzorech suda. So if it's tzorech suda, it's not considered interruption. Therefore, you can't make kiddush on wine, and you drink the cup. And after you make the broch of hamoitzi, and you go for the challah. And he says it's not a problem. Mishnah Berurah says it's mamash, and the Ramah says that's lechatchila. Continues the Ramah on page 96 on top. V'chein aminik poshut, that is the widespread custom b'medinos elu, in those countries. Ramah is referring to his own countries. In the Ashkenazish countries, the minik is widespread to make first netilas yadayim, first to wash, and afterwards to make kiddush. After it's made up often, and after it's to make hamotzi. Vain, lishanos, do not change that minik. Best minik is, says the Rama, to wash before Kiddush. Rak, but Leil Pesach, the only exception is going to be Leil Pesach. On the night of Pesach, commercial is Basim and Tofa and Gimel, on the night of Pesach has to be different. Why is it night of Pesach different? Why can't you wash before Kiddush? Yeah, you have a massive break. You have all maggot to do in the middle. So you can't, it would be problematic. And you can't argue that it's a chsuda, so you get, it's going to be a problem.
Is it okay to chop and change from one?
So no, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. No, it's not. It says that it's totally no. It's better not to change. I know that our families have changed. The truth is that most Ashkenazish family, over the course of the centuries, have changed. Because I don't have a doubt that if the Ramah says that was the minik, I'm pretty sure that 100, 200 years ago, most of our ancestors, they did it that way. And the question is, when did that minik drop? Perhaps some dropped earlier than others, but initially, a couple of hundred years ago, I'm pretty sure that everybody did as the Ramah says. It was the widespread minik to wash before Kiddush, so everybody must have changed at one point. Some changed recently, some not so recently, but I think it was the widespread custom. Yeah. Then it's better that way around. Yeah, there is definitely a svar to say so, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, especially.
What the Sephardim, I don't know if the Sephardim, what do you think is a Sephardish meaning?
I'm just thinking what my ancestors have done back there, I don't know.
It would be very interesting to know. I think that by the Sephardim, he was never accepted the custom to wash before Kiddush. I think about the Sephardim, they always did like the Shulchan Aruch, they always washed after Kiddush. I believe. But it would be interesting to check. The Mishnah Berurah have gotten some space, adds a bit of a reason why did people change the minhag. Why is it that nowadays many people wash after Kiddush? Why is it? His Mishnah Berurah says that Achronim write it's better to make Kiddush before Netilas Yadayim, because then you're older opinions. And many places have the minhag ready to wash after Kiddush. And the reason why they do so is like this: you don't get into trouble of potentially making Bor Pri Hagafen, and really should make the svar that he said, the rift the goli died, the rift chavivele. Shulchan Aruch's first formal opinion told us that if you washed before Kiddush, you have to make Kiddush on bread, because you show that bread is mechoshev to you. So if you're making Kiddush on wine, that's not ideal, according to that opinion. So therefore, in order to avoid any of those questions, you're better off making Kiddush and then washing. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah says, why some people have the minik, many people have the minik to wash after Kiddush. Mihu im kvar not al yod of kodim Kiddush, if you did wash before Kiddush, pezeh yesh la'asos karamoy, you should certainly do it like the Ramah says, afal pikeni kaddish al-yayin, you can still make Kiddush al-yayin. Right, so in terms of having on sukkahs or sometimes, it's perfectly in order. It's perfectly in order, and you could still make Kiddush al yayin, and it's perfectly in order. Is that because of hefsek?
The logistics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, perfectly fine. But that still means that you can't just 1 week do like this, 1 week like that. That would be not ideal. Yeah. Yeah, you have wine, and then you make a mitzvah. Yeah. There is some Yekish families, many Yekish families who still do it like this today, but they are, it is definitely an endangered species. There's definitely not so many of them around anymore. See if you'd gimel. How much do you need to drink of Kiddush? How much do you need to drink? Says Shulchan Aruch, Tzorich lishtois mikoy shel Kiddush kemeloy lugmov. You must drink the amount of a kemeloy lugmov. What is that? Shulchan Aruch defines meloy lugmov as follows. Dehainu, i.e. Kol sheisalkenu letzad echot, any that you move it to one side of your befiv in your mouth. Ve'yiroe meloy lugmov. If you put the liquid in one side of your cheek and it fills one side of the cheek, that is considered a meloy lugmov, without going into the other cheek. So one side. And another way of defining it, says the Shulchan Aruch, of a ruboy shel revis, that is the majority of revis. Revis with kodem achloikas, chazanish, if it's 150 cc or 86 cc, and that will be now the roiv of that, and then you'll have the shear of meloy lugmov. How much is that? Roiv of 150? 70, yeah. The engineering, they actually say 70, yes, just over 75. It doesn't have to be full 76. But yeah, just over 75. I suppose roiv. And similarly with 86, half of 86? 43 plus. And that's the meloy lugmov. So how much is it in a kois, in a conventional becha? Very little, right? It's very little. We've got, it's mamash, especially according to Reb Chaim Noah, your mamash drinking very little. So even, yeah, it's very little. And that's how much you need to drink. Pardon? Chazanish is always the biggest share. Yeah. Now the Mishneh Berurah says in Sivkot and Samaches that one should make sure that you should drink the meloy lugmov without large interruption. But I think that's anyway. It should be kedesh tias revias. So don't take a long time to drink that revias. But I think it's quite a minute amount. There is over here important bir halachas in Mishneh Berurah. We're not going to go into that now, but just for your reference. The whole discussion of Niskatna Shiurim or not, there's this wide machloikas, this international, universal, global machloikas about Chazanish Shir and Reb Chaim Noah Shir, all the measurements, which is very relevant on Pesach, but not only on Pesach, the truth is, throughout all the Iran, when we talk about Revias, when we talk about Meloy Lugmov, when we talk about all the Shiurim, Kebeya, when we talk about all the Shiurim, it's a machloikas as to whether Niskatna Shiurim or not, Tzlach, the opinion of the Tzlach, as to whether the measurements have changed over the years or not. And there is over here the Achrov, the Bialocha, he goes in great detail about this. And the Achrov, the Bialocha is famously that when it comes to the rice, one should be Machmir, and when it's the Rabbonim, one can be Mekel. It is a misnomer to call it Machloikas Chazanish Reb Chaim Noah, because it isn't. It's not really, the Machloikas wasn't invented by Reb Chaim Noah or the Chazanish. The Machloikas dates back from much, much earlier than that. We call it Reb Chaim Noah and Chazanish, but it really dates from beforehand. And the truth is that the Bialocha was before both of them, and he still discusses it. And he says, makes the hacha of the Reis, we are Machmir, the Rabbonon, we are Meikil. But again, it's important that it is well known that the Becha of the Chazanish, the Becha of the Chavetz Chaim, that is well known, the Becha of the Becha that the Chavetz Chaim himself used for Kiddush, apparently so. I didn't see it myself, but apparently it didn't hold the Chazanish share. And so I hear that the Becha of Rabbi Sol Salanta, which apparently still exists, also didn't hold the Chazanish share. Which is very interesting. It has to be understood, because
when did it become established?
So it depends on places, minhagim, and various places differ minhagim. It depends on various places. It's a topic in its own. Which places were more machmeh historically? Which places were more mekel historically? It's a very interesting topic. I heard there is contradicting reports about that as well. But yes, I'm saying that's the rule of thumb. That some places are different minhagim. Yeah. Yes.
I think that in more modern times, what share
Yes. Okay. So the Reb Shlomo Zalman's opinion in this was that the Ikra Din we paskin like the Molin Reb Chaim Noy says the minhag was always like Reb Chaim Noy. That's what Reb Shlomo Zalman says. Person who wishes to be machmir, he should do so. But he said that the minhag hakotum was always like Reb Chaim Noy's shir. In terms of Moshe Feinstein, he said no, he didn't say exactly the same. Moshe had a third shir which was quite similar to the Chazon Ish shir but slightly more lenient. So in between, but slightly more like the Chazon Ish. And he said that was the minhag in Litza for all the generations. He said Chaim Oizer had that shir and that was generally the minhag. And I forgot now, but it's quite close to the Chazon Ish, but not quite. It's in between, but like more towards the Chazon Ish. And what was the third opinion? Rabbi Yashiv is machmir. Rabbi Yashiv was quite machmir. But again, not only for the Reis, not the Rabbonons. Yeah. That is in terms of, yeah, but I think that a person who doesn't have a specific minhag, generally, the world paskins, generally, I think it's a true statement to make, unless a person's got a very specific minhag, the rule is you paskin like the Mishneh Berurah, who holds it for the Reis, any deraisa questions, such as matzahs on Pesach on the first night, such as whenever it comes to deraisas, you're going to go for the most stringent approach, and when it's a derabbanon, you can be lenient, like the Reb Chaim Noy's approach. I think Rabbi Frankel, chassidim generally, I think I'm generally more mekel, no? I don't think we're generally makbel the Chazon Ish.
A
small taka. That do the right. Take. Original was very small. Yeah. Very interesting. I am zoicha to have my great grandfather's becher, which is actually very very big. So it must be that it was a very big becher. It's a very big becher. So it's interesting. So I think maybe in that was from the I think the Yekis were makpid on bigger shiurim. Yeah. Okay. Right. And see if you done it, we'll do tomorrow. Beis Hashem. Just to recap what we covered tonight, we learned about washing before kiddush. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't like it, and he says that if you do that, then goli daita derif techavivale, you are showing that bread is more choshuv to you. Hence, you should not make kiddush on wine. You should go straight for hamotzi for the chalas. The Ramot disagrees, and he said, no, you can definitely do, if you wash before Kiddush, you can still make Kiddush on wine, and he said, that's the ideal way of proceeding. He said, that's the minhag, and you shouldn't change the minhag. On Leil Pesach, certainly you should wash after Kiddush, because of the Haggadah. And yeah, we spoke briefly about the amount a person should drink, which Shulchan Aruch says you should drink a meloy lugmov, which is the roiv of revius, and revius is defined as 150 or 86 according to contemporary measurements. And we discussed that the bi'alochavi goes into detail about niskat mashurim or not, and the achrov of the bi'alochavi in the Mishneh Berurah is that b'derais yomachin b'drabon yomekel. Kutchanek rabbi say.